All right. Welcome, everyone. Today is May 11th, Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day to all of you out there, Dolores, you especially.
Thank you.
If Belkia was on, we wish her the same. Maybe they'll join us in a little bit.
No, they've got a conflict. They won't join us today.
Oh, okay. Well, we are in Acts of the Three Nephites, chapter 14. I think we're going on 4 or 5 weeks now. And we're getting close to the end. We're on verse 45. That's where we'll pick up today, out of 60 verses. So yeah, we might get through it today. If not, we can finish up next week. That's okay. But if you'll remember, this is the part of the and the allegory, this is the part of the fourth visit. The way to keep this straight in my mind is I always go back to that article written by John Pratt, and this is the timing of the fourth visit, and he says that the servant is Mauricio. So as we read in verse 42, when the Lord said unto the servant, "Let's go down and cast them all into the fire," the servant said, "Lord, spare it a little longer." And so the Lord said, "I will spare it a little longer." And so now begins this double swap of branches. Right? We read in the last couple of verses 43 and 44 that we're starting to take the good branches from the wild trees and the good branches from the original tree, and we're swapping them across so that the Lord can preserve the fruit of the tree, and the fruit is the good works of the people. Any questions before we get started?
Well, yeah, the fruit is the feelings, the branches are the people.
Yes, correct. Yeah, the good feelings, the good works that produce the good feelings, as John would say. But you're right, in the sealed book, that's kind of the main issue that we're dealing with, is those high and holy sentiments of the people. That's the fruit that the Lord wants to spare, and he preserves it for the next season. All right, there's five of us here. I'll start us out in verse 45, and we'll just go around. And it came to pass that they took of the natural tree, which had become wild, and grafted in the natural branches, which also had become wild. And they also took from the natural trees, which had become wild, and grafted in their original tree. That is, though they were many wild branches, all shared in common the sap of the original tree. So that the Lord of the vineyard said to the servant, "Do not pluck the branches out of the tree, except that those that are very bitter, and you shall graft them in as I say." And this portion corresponds to Jacob chapter 5, verses 55 through 57. So you can kind of see this double swap, taking it from the original tree into the wild tree. Well, they've all become wild, but you've got the original house of Israel and then the different branches that were planted in the lowest parts of the land. And there he's taking the good branches that have become wild, but they still share the original sap, and he's double swapping them. Does anyone have any thoughts about what the sap of the original tree represents? That's a question that I had. I'm not sure I know what that is.
Brother Michael,
Yeah, go ahead, Aaron.
in Jacob chapter 5, verse 66, it says, "And they also took of the natural trees which had become wild and grafted into their mother tree." Does that have to do with the sap or no?
Yeah, maybe it is because the mother tree, that's the original sap. And then the branches that have been transplanted out to other trees, they shared that same sap, and now they're coming back and being planted, replanted back into the mother tree. And so they recognize where they had come from.
I think the sap could also be DNA. The Lord can actually work with our DNA, and we carry in our DNA our ancestors and what they've done and so forth. So the sap might be our DNA.
Yeah, that's really interesting. That's exactly how Reinach describes blood. in the Chronicles of the Jotun Ravaranek. He calls it the Great Tree. It makes sense to me, even from the principle that we learned last night in the meeting about that Japanese scientist that did the study about water. I knew about this from my mom, from this documentary on Gaia Network. There's an episode about this, about the water crystals, and it only makes sense with the principle of our DNA. You know, there's energy between us. There's the energy we use to be able to communicate, and like how our attitudes can affect the whole atmosphere of anything in any given situation. But yeah, that's, thank you.
I had a comment on that. You know, there's a saying that through our works we can obtain a better resurrection. And you might rephrase that as a better DNA. You know, the DNA affects so many things, and so much of our different types of bodies, you know, the body that we have now, or a translated body, or a terrestrial or celestial body. And so, by our good works, we can obtain a better bloodline, so to speak, or DNA. The other thing I was thinking about is, you know, when you read this, you first think, well, hey, it's the servant Mauricio, or whoever that servant is cutting these branches and removing these branches, but really the cutting of the branches is all done by war. And you know, like the king of Assyria will do the great cutting of the branches. And the now the servant and servants may graft in to the back into the lines and do the good part, but the servant, I don't really think, is doing the bad part. The wars, upcoming wars that destroy, cut off all these branches throughout the world. In fact, cut off 90% of the world, according to Isaiah, I think is done by an evil servant. So I'll pass those thoughts on.
Yeah, thank you both. Yeah, except those that are very bitter. Those are the ones that should be plucked out of the tree immediately. And so I'm not sure how we understand that today, whether it's by war or other things that are happening, natural disasters.
I have a thought, Brother Michael.
Yeah, go ahead.
You remember in the Book of Mormon, the Amalekites? I think it was the Amalekites. They put a red mark on their forehead.
Yeah.
I almost think that the bad, they root out their self. Wouldn't that make sense? Because it's not God that casts away anyone. It's the person's heart that will separate themselves from the good. That was just a thought. I don't know if that's true or not.
No, yeah, thanks for sharing. That's definitely a possibility.
Also, it might be those sentiments that the Lord told Enoch that he had enthusiasm. I don't know where that is. It's earlier in Moses, I believe.
Yes, Dolores, it's in Moses chapter 4, verse 17.
Thank you. And what are they?
There's, let's see, we have peace or resignation. It will be good for us to read that together. Can I read that, Brother Michael?
Sure, go ahead.
He says, "What makes you pleasing to my eyes? Because never before have I found in one man the fullness of my name engraved on his heart, just as there is with you the feelings of charity, enthusiasm, peace of the spirit, resignation to withstand adversities, benignity, compassion, faith, tenderness, and self-control, believing that you will attain a higher kingdom with such gifts that are in you. Seek to have with you a congregation of those who resemble you. Beautiful.
Yes. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Charity, enthusiasm, peace of spirit. Yes, I think we all desire to have those within us.
Yes.
And I believe Belkia wrote something about this. Maybe this is what you were talking about when I first came in. She wrote that article in one of the magazines about those attributes. And there's another verse in Acts of the Three Nephites. I can't remember if it's chapter 9 or chapter 8 that kind of talks about those same 9 attributes, but in a different way. Oh, here it is. It's in Acts of the Three Nephites, chapter 10, verse 7. And this one says, if the guidelines of our home are the teachings of Jesus Christ, then we will live in homes where joy reigns, whose branches of our posterity will be firmly rooted in the fruits of the Holy Spirit. And here they are: love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. These being the feelings that must fill our earthly abode as a heavenly refuge. And behold, joy is one of its fruits and will overflow through the walls and the homes of Zion. So Belkia made a connection in her article that the names of these 9 attributes were the fruits of each. One was the name, one was the fruit, I believe. I'd have to go back and read her article. Do you guys remember that?
No, I don't.
I'll find it. I'll find it. Put in the chat or whatever. But okay. One other thought I had about the sap is it could be the original gospel that was given to Adam, but was preserved through the house of Israel, right? That's a possibility.
Yes.
But we mentioned a few good things. I mean, DNA, the good feelings. Anyway, they share that common sap, and that's how they're able to thrive once they've been double grafted back. All right, Russell, do you want to take 46?
Sure. And the Lord of the vineyard then said to his servant, not to pluck out these wild branches, which were scattered throughout all the vineyard. Thus he said, we will take care again of these trees to fulfill that which was written by Nephi concerning the Lord of the vineyard, when he shall stretch forth his hand a second time to recover his people, which is of the house of Israel, for the purpose of swapping the branches, that is, grafting the natural branches in their original tree. So the Lord of the vineyard came to rejoice for having preserved the roots and also the branches of the first fruit.
Anything that sticks out in that one?
Brother Michael, can I read something from Galatians chapter 5 I want to share with you all?
Yeah.
It's in chapter 5, and I'll start at verse 22. Apostle Paul says, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. Against such there is no law. And they that are Christ's have crucified the flesh with the affections and lusts. If we live in the Spirit, let us also walk in the Spirit. Let us not be desirous of vainglory, provoking one another, envying one another. I love that verse.
Yeah. Yeah, it's talking about those same sentiments.
Yeah, and when Jonah says in chapter 10, this should be our heavenly refuge. And then we think about like the highest position of heaven or even on an earthly abode, you know, the United Order. It was so interesting last night. It was so difficult just hearing everyone talk about mothers. I was in pain and I still feel pain, even though it may look like I'm not. Brother Mauricio, he's like, I feel Aaron's spirit screaming, and I was. And then when he said, I first want Bento to speak, and then Brother Aaron, and I felt my heart Skip. Just wanted to share that. It's these things, they're just clear to where they're so intimate. We can feel each other and feel our feelings, and maybe we're getting in touch with the original language that maybe didn't always have to be with the tongue. Maybe sometimes just through the sentiments we could recognize what each other were feeling. But I don't know if this is all true or not. It's really moved on the principle of faith, isn't it?
Yeah, thanks
I
for
think
sharing that, brother. Russell, go ahead.
that Galatians is interesting because just before that, all that list, it listed all the negative ones,
Yeah.
it's the flesh, and so yeah, it's sometimes interesting to compare the two lists. I don't want to go through the negative ones necessarily at this point, but yeah, it's they're there, and we can see the opposite as well.
Yeah.
This list is mentioned quite a lot during in the scriptures, but there's no reference to it. Second Peter chapter 1 has a list, and I know the Doctrine and Covenants has, well, the first one is in 4, 5 through 6, and there they're described as the divine nature.
Yeah.
Sister Dolores, did you say Second Peter chapter 1?
Yes. Diligence, virtue, knowledge, temperance, patience, godliness, brotherly kindness, and charity. There's eight there. And I've got Enoch page 57, and I have no idea what Enoch I was reading. Charity, enthusiasm. Maybe that was referring to the one about Enoch. And they're referred to as divine attributes in the sealed Book of Mormon, Moses 3:4. Maybe that one's it. 3:4. And what was Galatians? Galatians what?
Chapter 5.
5. Okay. Thank you.
And I found the article from Belkia, and she has all of those aforementioned scriptures in there. And I pasted in the chat the link to that article.
Okay.
But the part that stood out to me, this is what she said. There are nine feelings mentioned in both verses, speaking of the Moses and the Acts of the Three Nephites that we just barely read. I noticed that the good feelings derived from God's name are in fact behaviors that align with the fruits of the Holy Spirit. And here's the key. The names are the expressions of the fruits. We learn, for instance, that charity is the purest expression of love of God. It is interesting to think about the other fruits and the names of God in this way. So she says, if we have feelings of love, we are capable of expressing more charity. By having joy, we will create enthusiasm. Here she connects each one. By experiencing peace, we will learn how to maintain the peace of the spirit. Practicing long suffering helps us to develop resignation to withstand adversities. When we are gentle in our daily lives, it will bring goodness. Learning to have faith will add to our faith. By being meek, we will act tender. Practicing temperance will create self-control. And the whole article is good, but that's kind of what I keyed in on as the crux of the article, where she's comparing those two, sealed Moses verse chapter 4 verse 17 with Acts of the Three Nephites 10 verse 7. But she also references Galatians 5, the Second Peter verse that you mentioned, Dolores. And I guess there's probably one in the Doctrine and Covenants. We'll have to go find that one. But yeah, it's in all the standard works. All spread.
Sister Dolores,
Yes.
which section in Doctrine and Covenants did you say?
Section 4 is, well, I have.
Yeah.
But there's another one as well, and I think it's in 77. It's a long chapter. I'm sorry, my memory is fading
Oh
fast.
no, this is the we have an abundance of good stuff here in these references we all found.
What put my attention on one time when I was teaching Doctrine and Covenants, the section of Peter, Second Peter chapter one, it said that Joseph Smith said that there were three keys for attaining the celestial kingdom, I believe, in that chapter. And so I became keyed in on those. And then as I read those attributes, I would find them throughout the other scriptures because they are not referenced in the back of in the index or the wherever you look to try and find other reference, other scriptures. So as you read and you find, you're going to have to develop your own list, and that's all I have.
DNC 107 has the list too, talking about the quorums. Decisions of these quorums are either of them are to be made in righteousness and holiness and lowliness of heart, meekness and long suffering, and in faith and virtue and knowledge, temperance, patience, godliness, brother kindness, and charity.
Thank you.
That's verse 40.
I had a comment on this verse.
Go ahead.
When I read it, I kind of get the idea that this is the time of Joseph Smith, maybe up to Mauricio, but where I'm getting that is, so they're plucking out the wild branches, and then he says, we will take care again of these wild branches, which are the Gentiles. So it's like they're gathering up the Gentiles there, and then he says that when he shall stretch his hand a second time, and that sounds like a little bit in the future, and that's linking to the Davidic servant, stretch forth his hand, at least that's how I interpret it, to recover his people. When they're sending out the 144,000 to bring everybody in and start. But yeah, when it seems to me that when they're primarily focusing on the Gentiles, trying to take care again of these Gentile trees, whether that's Joseph Smith's gathering or Mauricio's bringing forth more truth, and then righteousness, which is the Davidic servant, will cover the earth. But see where it says, I will stretch forth my hand a second time to recover his people. That sounds a little future. It's a little ahead of where we are today. And then they start the regrafting in of the Gentiles into the church again by getting, anyway, into the original tree, which would, as we've talked about, the original teachings. Anyway, they're just some of the thoughts I had.
All of this is very good. When I hear the stretching forth his hand for the second time, after, now that I'm familiar with the second invitation, I always think that that's what that means. Stretching forth his hand a second time, the Lord is extending his hand a second time to the Gentiles. Will you come? Right? The second invitation as opposed to the first invitation. And this is the day, this is our day where all of this grafting is taking place for the last time, so that the Lord can preserve that fruit for the next season and into the millennium, right? Shall we go on?
Sure.
Dolores, do you want to take verse 47?
Certainly. And the Lord of the vineyard saith unto his servant, Go therefore, send angels again to the land, and call servants, that we may labor diligently with all force in my vineyard, that we may prepare the way by which I may obtain again the natural fruit of the vineyard, a fruit that it will be good and more precious than any other fruit. And so let us work this last time with all the commitment you need to rescue my vineyard. For the end is near, and it will be the last time that I will prune the trees of my vineyard.
Any thoughts on that one?
So you can see, send the angels, you know, I interpret that as 144,000. And if you think back where that stretch forth my arm came from, it's Moses. They're fighting they were fighting different wars, and he was stretching forth his hands to cause the army to have power over, I think it's the Calamites or whatever, Acumenites. Forget how to pronounce that, but I think this is going to be a worldwide event that will come with real power. When he stretches forth his hand and sends angels, I think it will be a step up from what's happening at this moment.
Yeah, you'd think that it would be something that everyone would notice. But again, the Lord works in mysterious ways, so hard to tell. I guess we'd have to have the gift of discernment to know when that was taking place, right?
Excuse me, just one moment.
Yeah, it says for the last time. It says it twice. This is the last time, right? The Lord in previous verses, he was just going to go down that fourth time and burn the vineyard. But the servant said, please, let's spare it a little longer. And so he said, okay, we'll spare it a little longer, but this is it, right? We need to call all the servants together, including the angels again in the land. Call the servants that we may labor diligently with all the force in my vineyard. And by doing so, the fruit will be good and more precious than any other fruit. So this will be the best that the vineyard will produce before the end comes.
Right, and according to Isaiah's numbers, that's only 1% of the world that they'll gather out. The 90% of the world will die, and then there'll be about 9% of the world that kind of ekes out and manages to live through all these wars, and then 1% will be gathered to the New Jerusalem, which is still a big number. Actually, if you think it's among the church, then it's a very small number. But if it's probably broader, that it's across the whole world, then 1%, my holy portion, it's in Isaiah 6 when he talks about this, but that's his holy portion. That was the portion that they gave to the priests. Or anyway, it was the most sacred of the offerings. And that, whatever, if you think that's 1% of the world, it still could be a lot of people that would come to the New Jerusalem.
Yeah. Very good. Thank you, Dewey. Do you want to take verse 48?
And the branches shall be planted again, beginning with the last, that they may be first, and the former, that they may be last. Dig around the trees, both old and new, first and last, and the last and first, so that all come back to be treated for the last time. So dig around them, prune them, fertilize them again, for the last time, for the end is near. And if these last grafts develop and produce the natural fruit, Then I will prepare a way for them so they may grow and remain united in me, the Lord of the vineyard.
Hey, any thoughts on that?
Yes, I'm back now. Excuse me, I had to use the bathroom.
Oh, you're good, Aaron. What it, go ahead.
Called missionary work. I see an abundance of missionary work. Well, abundance to work with here.
Sure.
Yeah, there's the last sentence. There's an if-then statement. Whenever I hear those if-then statements, I always think, okay, this is conditioned upon people's agency. So he's not saying that this is exactly what's going to happen, but if these last grafts develop and produce the natural fruit, then I will prepare the way for them so that they may grow and remain united in me, the Lord of the vineyard.
So these are the branches that grew too far off. And maybe, I guess we could say, like in John, in somewhere in John, he references the Lord as the one true vine. And oh, I can't remember if he says this or not, but if they grow too far out, they break. We can kind of see that the true gospel does what holds the people together, and then after the death of Joseph and Hiram, everything fell into confusion, so we could say the branches kind of broke. Now the Lord wants to graft those back into the original tree because they do have that sap. Every single one, they have a little bit of that sap, because almost every denomination of the Restoration holds the Book of Mormon as like the center of our faith, you know?
Keystone.
Yes, Keystone.
That condition could go to the Gentiles. I believe they're the last grafts. Anyway, it sounds very conditional to me, and that sounds like the Gentiles, that there just won't be that many, there won't be that many of the restoration of the white Gentiles. Not talking about the Jews when they come in, but anyway, I get that if then is a big deal for us, the restoration group. I mean, we haven't even started gathering the Jews yet, and that's so anyway, that's kind of what I was thinking.
Yeah.
I suppose it still applies to everyone. Of course it does. Everybody has to meet the standard.
You know, I think there is a sister from Brazil, and I think she has Jewish ancestry. That made me think when we're talking about the Jews, I'm positive she has Jewish ancestry. I remember her saying it in one of the meetings. I just can't remember her name.
Yeah, well, my mother's Jewish, so right. So I'm half Jewish and half Ephraim, so
Look at
descendant of King David. So, Yeah, that's probably the only reason they maintain the. I have a line down to Adam, and that's probably the only reason they maintain that line is that it came through Jesse. So, anyway. But
Wow.
how much I got, who knows? After
I didn't
30
know your
generations, right?
Yeah, I didn't know your mother was Jewish, Brother Dewey.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it came across on the Mayflower out of them. They were going to kill all the Jews, so they hopped on.
Wow.
Very interesting. While you were talking there, I remembered the verse in section 82. It's DNC 82, verse 10. This will be familiar to all of you. I, the Lord, am bound when you do what I say, but when you do not what I say, ye have no promise. So there's the if then statement as well. I mean, it's technically not if then, but He's bound when we obey his commandments. When we do what he says, he will fulfill his part of the bargain. But if we don't, we have no promise.
And I think that's a good point, because we look at the first invitation and we think we want to do better, but we look at it with a humility, with an honor, with a memorial. We want to learn from our brothers and sisters to carry out that memorial and do what they weren't able to do. So in a sense, what they started won't fail. What the Lord started with them won't fail. And so, like, when we're experiencing this clarity, it may seem foreign to us at first, because all we know is dark side of the moon, I guess, in the world. The world can be a mean place, but we can look back on the vistas of the restoration, like when we've seen brothers quarrel and we think, why did they do that? How can we do better? How can we truly apply and learn, like, how, I can't remember if it was Mormon or Moroni, they wrote in the Book of Mormon, they said, we wrote these things so that you might be wiser than we have been. That's just my thought. It doesn't mean it's this way.
Yeah. No, thank you. Aaron, do you want to take verse 49?
I would love to. And as they begin to grow, you will take away the branches that bear fruit. That is, bitter feelings, according to the strength and size of the good. And you shall not take away the wicked all at once, lest the roots become too strong for the graft, and your graft die, and I lose the trees of my vineyard again. Therefore, you will not remove the evil feelings as the good ones grow, so that the root and the treetops have the same strength, until the good feelings overpower the bad, and the bad are cut and thrown into the fire. And so I will consume the wicked out of my vineyard forever. I would love to hear all of your thoughts on this.
Yeah. This reminds me of the wheat and the tares. They have to grow together, because you don't want to go out and tear out the wheat when you try and tear out the tares. But it sounds like a delicate balance. They're trying to balance the strength of the root with the strength of the branches. They don't want to take away one side or the other too quickly, because it would make the other one overpower it. So it's just this delicate balance, this fine line where they're trying to just take it little at a time as they go along, so that they can preserve the tree.
Almost like now we know how, or at least we're learning how to contain the evil feelings. We contain them, right? Or no? Maybe in one perspective, I guess.
Oh, Russell, you're on mute.
Yeah, I know. I was going to say that I think that's correct. I think it's interesting that you don't try to remove the bad all at once, because it actually has a power that sustains the root. And so you have to be careful. That's hard to believe, that the bad has good effect, but I think that's what it's saying.
And that makes sense with what Lehi was teaching his sons about the fall of man, because they were in a state of innocence. They didn't even know good, because they didn't know bad. And so I see that here. What do you all think on that?
I'll just give a quick experience that I've had. We have a little orchard in our backyard. We have about 10 fruit trees, different variety. And I didn't know this, but you're not supposed to trim the branches back, only in the early spring and late fall. But a couple years ago, the peach tree was getting really big, and the fruit was hanging down, and it was breaking off some of the branches. So I just took the cutters, and I just cut that thing down in like July. Not the whole thing. I didn't cut. I just took the biggest branches that were the problem, and I cut it down, and it pretty much it didn't kill the tree, but you could tell that the tree suffered for what I had done. And I
Oh,
was like,
no.
oh, I probably shouldn't have done it that way, and then I realized, okay, I need to do this early spring or late fall when it's getting cooler. But it was just kind of a, I am not the Lord of a vineyard. I would all of my trees would die if I had to do this delicate balance. But it's just kind of a my own, experience with my own peach tree that you can't just do it in the heat of the summer. The tree will suffer for sure.
Wow.
Put a comment on, so I will consume the wicked out of my vineyard forever. I think when you look at this, it's the stage of the earth where we're going to go up into the terrestrial earth here pretty soon. And so the only way you'd be able to re-resurrect, as in born again back on the earth, is you would have to fully repent completely to come back. So you wouldn't be wicked anymore. But basically, some people will just never come back to this earth. They'll have to come back to another earth on another time. But unless they change that, then at a certain point where we're going to terrestrial, I think the Lord is saying they're not going to let telestial people come down, period. And so that's what he says, the wicked out of my vineyard forever. They'll have to come through another earth. I think that's the one I've been reading, this book by The Lost Doctrines of the Restoration. It's really good, and it's he had discerned about multiple mortalities. A lot of things that we're teaching in he's on Zion Media. It's called The Lost Doctrines of the Restoration. And it's amazing. It's all there. He's just been bringing it back up. There it is right there. Russell's holding it up. It's a great book. And if you go to Zion Media, they do a thing on Thursday night. I think they're on the 11th time through. But they go through this book, and it's one of the best books I've discovered this year, simply because I'm just blown away that he's discovered the doctrines that we're now teaching. That, for instance, the LDS Church is just like the people of Moses, that the Melchizedek priesthood was taken away. And then he talks about the next church, the terrestrial church, which is called, interesting enough, the Church of Christ, which is what we're called. And then, of course, the next church was, the Church of the Firstborn. But in there, he deals with a lot of these situations where right at this time period, you could be locked out of this earth now if you didn't fully repent. You won't come back on, where it says, I will consume the wicked out of my vineyard forever. Anyway, that's how I interpret that verse.
Yeah, no, it totally makes sense. Because as we initiate the millennium, you're right, only those that are living the terrestrial law and the celestial, those two groups will remain on the earth, where the people who are living the telestial law, which is, what we see around us mostly today, those would be the ones that will be removed. Good point. Let's see. I think we have time for at least one more, maybe two more verses. Has everyone had a chance to read? Did we go all the way around? Okay, let me take verse 50 and I'll do 51 as well since it's short. And the branches of the natural tree I will graft in the natural branches of the tree, and I will gather them again that they may bring forth the natural fruit, and they shall be one in me again, the Lord of the vineyard. For how much the wicked shall be thrown out, even out of all the land of my vineyard, and burned. Behold, Only this time will more I prune my vineyard. So the last time. And it came to pass that the Lord of the vineyard sent his servant, and the servant did as the Lord commanded him, and brought other servants, but they were few, and were few. All right, thoughts on that?
I think we should read these footnotes. We have 101:55 of Doctrine and Covenants.
Yeah, let's go through those.
Okay, I got section 101:55, and it says, "And the Lord of the vineyard said unto one of his servants, Go and gather together the residue of my servants, and take all the strength of my house, which are my warriors, my young men, and they that are of middle age also among all my servants who are the strength of mine house, save those only whom I have appointed to tarry." And verse 62 says, "And his servant went straightway and did all the things whatsoever his Lord commanded him, and after many days all things were fulfilled." And Brother Michael, you were saying this is Brother Mauricio?
Yeah, well, according to the summary of this chapter that John Pratt wrote, he identifies this servant as Mauricio. This is the fourth time that the Lord had come down with his servant. And in previous episodes or previous readings, I'm not sure if you were on them or not, Aaron, we mentioned that the servant could be the same servant coming down just in different mortal probations. Like, for example, Daniel. He was the first servant, but Daniel could have come back as someone else in the second visit, his same spirit, and then in the third as Joseph Smith, then in the fourth as Mauricio, and then in the fifth is during the millennium, and I think John Pratt identifies that one being the one mighty and strong, who would be a descendant of Joseph Smith. But that was his speculation. I don't know how close to the truth that is.
Can I share?
Well,
I
I
understand.
wanted to make a comment that
Yep.
I
Go ahead,
think
Dewey.
John, when the Savior came down for his mission, obviously John the Baptist was the servant. I mean, he was ordained. They didn't have any priesthood. He was ordained in his 8 years old in his mother's womb or something. So, I mean, John the Baptist was one of the servants that came down. I was thinking about that last week when I was going through that.
Who was Elias?
Yeah, he was the Elias. And and I think that the mighty and strong servant is the Davidic servant that Isaiah talks about, that Abram Gilead he talks about, that will do, if you look at what they're this the history of DNC 101, they're going back to redeem Zion. They've gathered up a bunch of people to go back, and they weren't worthy or whatever. But when this repeats, it's cl clear in the scriptures that not only the servant, the mighty and strong, or what I think of as a Davidic servant, will be there, but the Savior will be there and go with them. And I think that's the same thing. We're kind of linking all back to just like Moses when he was in the desert stretching forth his arm. They will be going back, stretching forth their arms and fighting the whatever forces that might be. It could be the king of Assyria attacking the land at that time. I know the Lord had told me that we would stop the Russian army in Missouri, and that Isaiah 6 would repeat where he prayed all night, and then a 185,000, the army of 185,000 were killed at that time on Passover, and that this will repeat in a few years from now on Passover. So anyway, I think all these things are linking back to Moses' time and also Joseph Smith's time, where they were trying to redeem the vineyard. Yeah,
Yeah.
and I'm done.
Thank you. Aaron, did you want to say something else?
Yeah, in my understanding, Brother John is the Davidic servant, and Brother Steve is the mighty and strong. That there's no doubt in my mind, but it doesn't mean it has to be the same for any of you. But there's no doubt in my mind. Brother Steve is the mighty and strong. Brother John is the Davidic servant, and there was something else I wanted to say, but I can't remember what it was.
All right, great, Aaron.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
I think we're done, Michael.
Yeah, I think that wraps it up. I noticed in the footnote of verse 51, that third footnote, their numbers were few. It doesn't, it can change the, it has the RLDS verse, but it doesn't have the LDS verse. It just says Jacob, but it's, if you want to write in, it's actually Jacob chapter 5, verse 70.
Oh, thank you.
Basically says the same thing. Their numbers were few. So I think we can see that honestly in the effects of the second invitation, at least today. It may grow to be humongous in the future, but as of right now, the servants are few.
Oh, I remembered. There's no doubt in my mind that Jonah is with the abridgment of these the Lord's words. He's talking about the second invitation. No doubt. Because if you compare this with Moses chapter 12, you can see. Oh, and that's a whole nother thing. I don't want to get into that. But maybe you'll have to read that on your own time. But it's Moses chapter 12 when it talks about Brother Mauricio, Moses, Joseph, mighty and strong. Joseph of Egypt, Joseph Smith the third. It's very cool. I think that's an understatement.
Okay. Well,
Thank you all for your participation. Yeah, let's pick up in verse 52 next week, and we can probably get through to the end after that.
Yeah.